Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Changing a subject just a little bit, and I found this absolutely fascinating. Face recognition apparently struggles to recognize us after 5 years of aging. Now, this is very, very... Look, I've had it some mornings that my face doesn't even... My phone doesn't want to know me. And that's a little uncomfortable. But either way, we wanted to understand a little bit more about it. Craig Pedersen is a digital forensic practitioner and a fraud and cybercrime investigator. Good morning. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
So is it an insult if your phone doesn't recognize you in the early morning?
I think one's got to count one's blessings and be grateful.
Right, that there is an early morning, right.
I think if I could have my phone refuse to unlock before I've had some sort of caffeine into my system, I'd be happy too.
Right, exactly. So it's actually saving us from ourselves. But how does this whole face recognition thing work? You know, we just assume that, you know, yeah, that's what it is. But how does it work?
Well, there's different forms. So when one looks at facial recognition, the simple theory to it is that there are a couple of measurements on the human body that are just not going to change. As we age, you can put on a little bit of weight on your midriff. You can add another chin. But your ears can't really get fat, can they?
Right. Not through lack of trying.
No, short of doing a Mike Tyson, your ears aren't going to get shorter or longer.
Right.
Nobody's ever looked at anyone and said, "My, you've put on a lot of weight around your nose," because it's cartilage.
Right.
It's not muscle. So there's certain elements of the human face that are quite predictable. They're going to stay the way they are. The measurement from the tip of the head to the chin is, the human face is about symmetry. And it's the perfect symmetry of the balance of measurement from the crown of the head to the tip of the nose to the jawline. The percentage of space that the forehead takes. Some people have longer foreheads than others. And there are about 128 unique measurements on the human face that can be used in order to verify person to person. Now, on cellular phones, those measurements or run on a pretty basic level because you're also right on top of the phone. You know, facial recognition wouldn't be as convenient as it is if you had to be a meter away from the camera.
Ah, that's interesting.
So the depth from the camera does make a difference. We've taken photos for one of the mortuaries before of somebody who passed away.
Right.
And the last known photo of them was 17 years previously. In the interceding 17 years, life hadn't been particularly good to that gentleman.
Right.
He'd been living on the street.
Wow, okay.
Now, you can anticipate there's going to be a lot of change in the pallor of the skin.
Mm.
Obviously, it's a post-mortem photo as well. And, of course, the last photo of him alive, he had a beard on. And still, we're able to give a 86% confirmation that that is the correct person. Obviously, in a case like that, it's to guide them until the DNA results are returned.
Right.
But, I mean, you can get that level of precision. It's just that cell phone cameras are not quite there yet. The algorithms are still evolving. But it is something to be wary of, especially when you take into account that on some of the newer phones, like the iPhone, we not only use our face to unlock the phone, we use our face to log into our banking.
Right. So
your banking app interfaces through to it.
Right.
I think fortunately, on the majority of handsets, you still have the ability to override it with a manual password.
Right.
However, one thing, if people want to take anything away from an early morning show, take this away.
Mm.
Do not be the only person that's got the unlock code to your phone. Don't. We learned very quickly during COVID where a lot of people passed away and their families were not able to continue with normal banking transactions, managing of their accounts.
Absolutely.
Because they couldn't get into the devices.
Yeah, I think that is absolutely critical. I know that we unfortunately also learnt a difficult way where somebody couldn't get into their phone, unfortunately, had become very ill, and that was exactly the problem that we had. So we have a thing at home that there's a password for people's phones, and that everybody knows that, because otherwise it really does become a very, very difficult, potentially a very difficult situation. How dangerous is it today in terms of, you know, our phones are everything. They contain our whole lives, our banking apps. They have the ability to do just about anything. And we walk around with them as though they just make phone calls.
Yep.
Does facial recognition add to the security, or does it in fact make it more dangerous and make us more vulnerable?
No, I think it's a very good question. Look, I think you're spot on correct in terms of the fact that our entire diaries, our whole lives are on our phones.
Mm.
Facial recognition does add a very good layer of convenience and protection. It does add a very good measure to your digital life. The problem is people don't look closely enough at the underlying measure, and we still, on a daily basis, are finding people whose phones are intercepted because they're using Gmail, mm-hmm. and they haven't got two-factor authentication enabled. We have companies with the same thing where the invoice interception takes place on their network. They're meant to pay person A, and suddenly somebody else's bank details jump into the invoice. And again, things like Gmail play a big role to that. Very important that the underlying security of your phone is quite dependent on the security of the mail account it's attached to.
Oh, that's
and then the facial recognition and PINs are layered on top of that as additional. So you can have facial recognition, you can have PIN codes, but if the underlying Gmail account is poorly protected and doesn't have two-factor authentication, then your phone is as vulnerable as it can be.
Mm-hmm. In other words, what you have to do, from what I'm understanding anyway, is you build layers of security.
Absolutely.
It's not just about one thing. It's about different levels.
Absolutely. It's exactly the same as home security.
Mm.
Your first layer of defense is flying squad for your area.
Right.
If somebody who wants to hurt you gets past flying squad, they've still got to get past your neighborhood armed response.
Right, right.
If they get past them, they've got to get past your neighborhood watch. Then they've got to get past your gate with wire on top of it and your electric fencing. Then they've got to get to the house, past your beams, then they've got to get past the alarm. So somebody's got to go through different layers of security to actually harm you or take your stuff.
Right. And you can't just rely on one level, and that's the same thing with your phone. So I think a number of takeaway points here is layer it. Make sure that you've layered it. Number two, make sure that somebody else has access to your password in case, God forbid, something happens to you, that they are still able to do so. And the other thing is try, just keep healthy, because you would hate your phone not to recognize you. Craig Pedersen, digital forensic practitioner and fraud and cybercrime investigator, talking to us about facial recognition.